Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gorton Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gorton. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 80 countries around the world over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegorton.org. Again, that's georgegorton.org. Remember, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on privacy when we come back. Well, 3,300 years ago, Moses instructed our fathers. He said, "You shall not have in your bag diverse weights, a great and a small. You shall not have in your house diverse measures, a great and a small, but you shall have a perfect and a just weight, a perfect and a just measure shall you have." Well, our founding fathers at the Constitutional Convention in 1787 followed that scriptural principle of law when they put into our Constitution at Article 1, Section 10, these 17 words. It says, "No state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debts." Well, in 1933, President Roosevelt took our gold away, and in 1964, President Johnson took silver coin out of circulation. Now, in place of just weights and balances, these two presidents introduced into our current practice in our monetary system the first, second, and fifth planks to the Communist Manifesto. They gave us Federal Reserve notes in place of gold-backed treasury bills and clad coinage in place of silver coin. Now, in the intervening 70 years or so, we Americans have gone from being the world's number one creditor nation until today we're the world's number one debtor nation. Now, who do you think were the better financial planners for our nation? Moses and our founding fathers, or Franklin D. Roosevelt and Lyndon Baines Johnson? Now, if you'd like to learn more about hard money and how to use it properly, it's another of the many lessons in our business school conducted twice a year here at the law school. And if you'd like to learn more, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package first. That's the place to start. Doesn't cost anything. It's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. And it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free. And you can call right now. The number's 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Our business school is also available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, just go to the website georgegorton.org. It's an easy one, georgegorton.org. Click on to the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Again, that's georgegorton.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about privacy and privacy issues. Now, you can be just as private as you want to be. Nobody knows anything about you that you haven't told them. And so in the last few programs, I've been showing you that all this information that other people have about you is filled out by you. And in some cases, it's kind of innocuous, like a public opinion survey. You know, the LG Electronics Company I showed you in the last program has a product registration. They want all this information. They got 23 things that they want me to tell them about myself. And when I get through telling them these 23 things over here, I will have confessed by my own hand and filled this out and given them the information free and given away about, you know, half my privacy in just one card. And I don't want to do that. I don't know these people from jack squat, and I don't want to give them this information. Now, let me tell you that there is a problem here called identity theft. And when somebody goes to steal your identity, they only need three things. Three. Not 23. The LG Electronics people are asking me 23 things, and if I give them these 23 things, I'm giving them way more than they need to steal my identity and clean out my bank account. For me to steal your identity and clean out your bank account, I need three things. I need your name, social security number, and your birth date. That's all I need. I have to have those three. Name, social security number, and birth date. And hell, everybody asks you for your name, social security number, and your birth date, and you give it out like candy to trick-or-treaters, for crying out loud. You know, somebody says to me, I want to know what your social security number is right away. I said, what kind of a thief are you? A doctor asked me for my social security number. What the hell's the matter with you asking me for my social security number? What are you trying to do, steal my ID? Now, the people whose identity is being stolen are poor people. Poor people. These poor people don't have money, and that's why they use credit. People that have money don't need credit. Now, I don't have any credit. I know that's a cardinal sin here in America. You got to be a terrorist not to have credit, but I don't have any. Now, I guess I should qualify that I'm not really sure that I don't have any credit because I have some friends. You know, I've got a friend I can call. Credit we typically think of as being a bank account, a credit card, a letter of credit from the bank. You know, an open account with the Shell Oil Company, you know, so I can charge a charge account. You know, we think of credit. I don't have any charge accounts. I can't buy Shell gasoline with a credit card. I don't have one. But that doesn't mean that I'm without resources when I'm away from home. One time I was up in Niagara Falls, and my motorhome, the transmission went out. And so, in fact, I was over in Canada when it happened. I had two gears left. I had first and second. So I had to drive all the way from Canada back to Buffalo in second gear, about 30 miles an hour. It was kind of a pain. I don't know, it's 30, 40, 50 miles or something like that from the falls back to Buffalo. And so I got into Buffalo and I found a little shop on a street there, you know, some side street. And I found this little transmission shop. So I pulled in there and I said to the guy, I think the transmission went out. I said, well, let me take a look. And so he took a look and he said, yep, you've lost your transmission. I said, well, what's that going to cost to fix? And he said, well, you're going to need about... Oh, he said about $2,000. Now, I had $2,000, but, you know, if I spend $2,000 on this transmission, what am I going to eat tomorrow morning for breakfast, you know? So I got to mulling that over, and I said, well, you know, normal people, you know, they got their credit card. They say, well, put it in, and here's my credit card. So I said to the guy, I said, well, $2,000, huh? I said, okay, so we struck a deal. You know, we talked about the payments and one thing and another. And, of course, you know, I'm from out of state. Out of state, hell, I'm almost from out of country. And so he kind of liked to get paid. And I said, well, I'll tell you what I'll do. I got to call home to get some money. Now, in order for me to get money from Missouri to Buffalo, New York, normal people, you know, they'd have a checking account and they'd write a check, or they'd call their bank and they would make arrangements and have a wire transfer. You know, well, I don't have any of that. So, you know, being kind of private and all, trying to maintain my privacy, I called home and I said, hey, Dirk, go get some ounces of gold. I forgot. And gold at that time was about $300 an ounce, so 300 and a 2,000. I guess I needed about 7 ounces. So I said, well, Dirk, take about 8 ounces of gold, put it in a package, and send it to Frank. Get that in the mail to me right away, would you? And so he said, I'll take care of that, Dad. And so I said, okay. So I got on the telephone, I called Frank, the gold broker. I said, Frank, I got 8 ounces in the mail to you today. And I'm sitting up here in Buffalo, New York, and I'm broke down up here, and I need, in this case, I needed $2,500. I need $2,500, Frank, sent up here. So I want you to send me $2,000 of it, if you would, just wire $2,000 to this account. And so the guy had an account at his bank, so I got his account number. And I gave it to Frank. Frank said, I'll take care of that. And so my gold broker goes ahead and sends the $2,000 to this guy's account. It doesn't take very long to do that. You can wire money from, you know, Los Angeles, California to Buffalo, New York in about 2 hours, something like that. And so in about a couple hours, we got a call from the bank. Hey, there's $2,000 been deposited in your account up here, and so the money's good. You can go ahead and go to work. And so he went ahead and went to work, and he fixed my transmission. Now, those of us that like privacy have friends, and we have business associates. Now, Frank's my friend, but he's a business associate. And doing credit business is bad business. Credit business is bad business. It's not illegal. It's just not good. And the only time I do credit business is when there's a necessity, when there's some reason for it. Otherwise, I pay cash. You know, when I come into your store and I buy your horse or I buy a ton of feed, I just pay you, load it in my truck, and haul it away. That's good business. That way you've been paid, and I've taken my discounts, and you know that the check is good because there's no check there at all. Furthermore, I know that my privacy has been protected because I'm not giving you a lot of personal information over here that you need to make sure that you've got the information that you need to sue me so that you can force me to pay you when I don't pay. Now, when you're doing business with these big corporations like American Express, and the last time we were talking about this, I brought up American Express, and they're as good a company as any. I'm not knocking American Express. They all do the same thing. They all work the same way. You can't have privacy with American Express, MasterCard, Visa, and Discover. It ain't going to happen. And furthermore, you have to give them the information that they need to steal your identity. Look at this. It says, tell us about your business. They want to know your company name, your company phone, your email address, tax ID number, years in business. They want to know if it's a farm, nonprofit, and all other, company street address, city and state. All right, then they want us to tell us about yourself. Isn't that a sweet way to say, confess to us this information? It says, tell us about yourself. Caudat sweet. I love it. Sounds like Katie Couric, you know, on the 6 o'clock news. They want to know my name and social security number, my home street address, home phone, date of birth. And then they want me to sign this. So I'm going to sign this and date it. Now they've got my name, social security number, and date of birth. That's everything they need to steal my identity. I don't want anybody to steal my identity. I don't want to get a bill from American Express that says, hey, you ran up $5,000 on a Carnival cruise, now pay us. I don't want that. I don't want to be surprised someday that somebody went out and had a good time on my credit. So by eliminating credit and doing business in cash, I save 33%. That's coming off the top. And then secondly, nobody gives me a surprise like, guess what? You took a Carnival cruise. So nobody has stolen my identity yet, and nobody is going to in the future, because stealing my identity, you know, is like stealing dog doo-doo. It's worthless. But there's more to the American Express card. Well, a whole lot more. And that's why I said the other day, you have to be brain dead, you know, to sign this contract. You got it. And they go on to say that that I understand that the agreement governing the account includes an arbitration provision which impacts my opportunity to have claims related to the account heard in court or resolved by a jury and to participate in a class action or similar proceeding. I understand that the agreement governing the account also provides, among other things, that the account terms such as fees are subject to change. Okay, let me explain that one to you. I understand that the agreement governing the account includes an arbitration provision. All right. Your Constitution guarantees you in all matters in excess of $20 a jury trial. And what American Express is saying is that we want you to waive your Seventh Amendment right to a jury trial. And if you have any controversy with us, that you will submit to arbitration. Well, that's just real special. Well, who's going to pick the arbitrator? American Express. I explained it to you the last time. See, American Express and all the big credit card companies, they have this neat little provision that they put into the contract, and it's right here, but it's in fine print. I mean, I got to put on my 10-power loop to read this. And so I'm reading to you, I understand that the agreement governing the account includes an arbitration provision, which impacts my opportunity to have claims related to the account heard in court or resolved by a jury. In plain language, that means I waive my Seventh Amendment right to a jury trial and submit to arbitration in front of an arbitrator picked by you, American Express. That's why I say, you got to be brain dead to sign something like that. They go a step further and say, what if there's a class action suit? What if American Express screws a million people out of $10,000 each or $1,000 each, which is very common? I mean, hell, you read about it, you hear about it. Katie Couric even reports on it every once in a while. Class action lawsuits against John Manville or breast implants or something like that. So if American Express were to stiff a bunch of their cardholders and there's a class action lawsuit, you agree that you cannot participate in a class action lawsuit against American Express even after they've committed a criminal act against you. I don't want to do that, American Express. If you commit a criminal act against me, I want you to be 100% responsible for your actions, and I want you to pay me and every other member of the class. And American Express says, oh, well, we don't want to do that. We want to be criminals and we want to steal from you, but we don't want you to sue us. So you got to agree that if we steal from you, you agree that you won't sue us. No, I won't agree to that. Take your card and shove it. That's the bottom line to that story. Then there's additional cards. Now, I've advised additional card applicants that you may obtain, verify, exchange, and use information about them in the same manner as described above. Did you get that? For these additional cards, I've advised additional card applicants that you may obtain, verify, exchange, and use information about them in the same manner. Information about them. Underline that. Information about them. Your boss comes up to you and he says, hey, let me give you an American Express card so that you can go out on the road and use it. So the information then, as an employee, your employer is going to give to American Express. Well, isn't that just real special, boss? Thanks a lot. Yeah, I want you to tell American Express my name, social security number, and my birth date. I want you to give them the same information that you gave them so that I can use your company card. No, 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 boss. I don't want to give that information to anybody. And that's another reason why I don't want to be an employee. Now, employees, and I used to be an employee, so if you're working for somebody as an employee, don't take this, as a put down. I mean, we're all slaves at some point in our lives. But an employee is a bondservant. In biblical terms, we used to call you bondservant. And we bore a hole through your ear, stick a ring in there, keep the hole open. And then we buy, sell, and trade you. We do that today. We still have bond servants today. I mentioned that to people, and they look at me and gasp in horror, and they say, no, 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 Mr. Gordon, not in America. We don't have bond servants here and slaves. Oh, yeah. Yeah, we do. In fact, the bond servants in America are a very privileged class of people. I don't know if you knew that or not, but I was reading the paper one day, and there's a guy, I've forgotten his name now, he's some baseball player. And he was being interviewed, and he was commenting, and he said, I did not know that I had been traded to the Seattle Mariners until I read about it in the sports section. I mean, he was a baseball player. He is a pitcher for the New York Yankees. I don't remember his name, but he had been traded to the Seattle Mariners. You see, he signed a contract with the New York Yankees, for $10 million or whatever they get paid. And the New York Yankees, who now own this guy's contract, they own this guy. They own his labor and his services for a term of years. And they decided to sell him and make a profit. They sold this pitcher just like I sell a cow. I want to make a profit one day, so I just go out and take old Bessie and I sell her to Don Uchman down the road. And I take $1,000 for Don from Don, and I load the cow up, and the cow says, geez, I didn't know I'd been sold until I was delivered to the Uchman farm. And this pitcher, he says, I didn't know I'd been sold until I read about it in the sports page. It's called a bondservant. Very privileged class of people. And they're bought, sold, and traded just like cattle. In fact, they're very solicitous. These people work hard to become bondservants. Just thought I'd share that one with you. Now, you know, if that's what you want to do in life, that's fine. But, you know, there's no privacy as a bondservant. You know, when you're owned by the New York Yankees and bought, sold, and traded like cattle in a cattle auction, you know, that's not exactly the place to have privacy. I don't deny they make a lot of money. I mean, you know, if you want to trade your privacy for money, American Express offers you all kinds of neat benefits. Listen to the benefits that they're offering. If you will trade your privacy, we will give you flying hours on 21 major airlines. You can stay at hundreds of superb hotels and resorts around the world. You can shop for a digital camera, a designer bag, a mountain bike, and the list goes on and on. And what's more, we'll start you out with 5,000 bonus points, giving you the opportunity to redeem your rewards faster. We'll give you all of this if you will just give up your privacy. Well, okay. You know, some people, there are people like that, you know, we call them whores. If you'll just give up your virginity, if you'll just give up your body, we will pay you $100. Okay, well, I'm not for sale. And so the answer is no. And I'm not going to spread my legs for you. Unlimited points, business benefits, fee-free for your first year. I told you about that in the last program. That's what we call bait and switch. Free the first year. Okay. And so you say, well, God, that's pretty good. I'm going to save $95, and then you can get four extra cards here. It says, give your employees the advantage of the business green rewards card, plus earn rewards for all purchases made on additional cards. And so I'm gonna take this card, save $95, and I'm gonna give it to you. Then I'm gonna give your personal identification to American Express so that you can have my business card, so that you can use it in my business, and I can use your personal information so that somebody out there can steal your credit, steal your identity. Hey, if you got a boss like that, you know, you don't need any enemies. And it sounds good, but, you know, when you spend a little time analyzing this over here, like I said before, you know, if you're not brain dead, you ought to be able to start adding this up and saying, wait a minute, what's this American Express company getting out of this? American Express is going to get 6% of every purchase that you make, and you're going to pay for it in the price of the product. If you think the guy in the store is paying that fee for you, you got your head up the wrong end of your anatomy again, Bob. When you go in to buy something for $100, the real price is $94. The merchant added $6, rounded it off to $99.99. And you're paying for that 6%. So when you use your American Express business card, it costs you $6 more to buy the good. 6% more, that's when you buy it and you're paying for it. Then if you pay for it on time, you pay another 15 or 20 or 25 or 28 or 32% interest on top of that. Plus on top of that, you've got some late charge fees that I mentioned to you last time. That means they're nickeling and diming you to death. There's nothing free here about this American Express card. And the bait is, we'll give you the card and you don't have to pay the $95 fee. Hey, big deal. And then next year I get to pay the $95 fee because now I'm hooked on the card. Son, when you got an account, you got to keep the card. I mean, you know, let's be intelligent people. And then you got to pay this thing on time, and every time you don't pay it on time, you've got a contract that says, hey, I agree to pay you 3%. That's not quite 3, it's 2.99%. Some Jew must have figured that out. P.S. Bonus points are offered only if you reply to this offer by November 29th. Hooray, hooray, hooray! Step right up! Don't miss this opportunity to be the first person on your block. I mean, come on. deadline, November 29th. I mean, these whores over here would take this application today if I'd call them on the phone. You know, a whore isn't concerned about a deadline. What the hell are you talking about? And then here's another one here. In membership rewards, terms and conditions of the membership rewards program apply. If you're an existing American Express card member with a membership rewards relationship, your account will be linked to that existing relationship, and a $10 fee may be assessed for each relationship. Annual linkage fees may also apply if you have a corporate card or business card from Open from American Express. The link to your membership rewards account. For more information or to enroll in the membership rewards program, visit, and then they give you their web page. $10 fee, did you see that? They got this $10 fee here. They got lots of fees, and this is where the banks make oodles and oodles of money. They'll make it mounted on the interest, per se. They got all these charges and costs in here, and you're agreeing to it when you sign for the membership. Isn't that just real special? All right, so enough of that. You can get your own card, you know, if you want one. And I just wanted to share that with you, LG Electronics, American Express. And I'm not picking on LG Electronics. Hell, it could be General Electric or Ford Motor. And here's a little kicker I will throw in. Oftentimes when you sign one of these contracts, you know, like with, say you buy a new Chevrolet automobile. And you sign these papers, you don't read them. The salesman tells you what he thinks is in the contract. And what he doesn't tell you is what you should know, what you need to know, but he's not going to tell you because it's throwing cold water on the parade, and we don't want to do that. And so he tells you the good benefits over here in big bold letters, but he doesn't tell you the downside. Here's one of the downsides. Let's suppose you buy this Chevrolet automobile, and for whatever reason you get a lemon. And it happens once in a while. You get this lemon, and you've got some problems with your Chevrolet automobile, and so you want to sue General Motors because they gave you a bad product. There's going to be a clause in there that says if you want to sue General Motors, you have to sue them in Detroit, Michigan. Now, where do you live? Well, maybe you live in Philadelphia or Los Angeles. And the transmission went out, and General Motors won't fix it, and you've been without a car for a while, and you think they owe you a little something, and you want to sue them. You can sue them, but you got to go to Detroit to do it. Now, if you're living in Los Angeles and you got to sue these guys in Detroit, that puts a damper on it, doesn't it? General Motors, it wouldn't make any difference to General Motors if they got sued in Philadelphia or Poughkeepsie, New York, or Eureka, California. It's irrelevant to them. They have factories, they have offices, they have plants, they have legal staff in every state in the United States. But you don't. And for you to sue them in Detroit, Michigan is a real pain. In fact, it's an impossibility. And so what they're saying, in effect, is if we want to sue you, we've got all kinds of resources to sue you right in your hometown. If you want to sue us, you have to come to Detroit, Michigan, where it's impossible for you. And you want to do business with these kind of clowns? You know, I don't mind doing business with people that are fair and honest and up front, you know, but when they take advantage of me like that, or when they propose to take advantage of me, you know, I was born at night, but I wasn't born last night. Let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. And if you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, please go to the homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives. That can be accessed through the website as well. Now, the Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. The opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of our advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or local radio station. So please don't blame the people who put this program on the air. They're just doing it for money, just business. We pay them. They put it on the air. They're not responsible for what I say. And if you're offended, be offended at me. Don't be offended at the radio station or the disc jockeys or any of those people. They're all good people. They don't share the same views that I do, necessarily. They should, but they don't. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. Be sure to ask for that free introductory CD package. It doesn't cost anything. Freedom isn't for everybody, and it may not be for you, but it doesn't cost anything to find out. And, you know, you may find out, well, God, that really sounds interesting. I think maybe I'd like to participate in that. Maybe I'd like to have some privacy. Most people don't want privacy, so I don't want to force privacy on people that don't want it. But occasionally you'll run across some guy and says, well, God, that really sounds kind of interesting. I'd like to do that. And we'd like to show you how. All right. Now, I showed you a bunch of these real neat, Do You Speak Credit. Now, if you'll go to our archives on this Do You Speak Credit, and I don't know the date. I'd have to go look that up. But it's on our website. And the series was called Do You Speak Credit. And I did a series of programs on that very subject. Let me flip through this file folder here and see if there's any other neat little... Nope, there's nothing more in here now that I've exhausted American Express and LG Electronics. There's a woman here that does a little piece here. Her name is Liz Pulliam Weston. And she put a little thingy in here, why going broke is a fact of life in America. And she's an economist. And if you'd like her material, it's called moneycentral.msn.com. That's moneycentral.msn.com. Content, banking, bankruptcy guide. And there's a number here, P102899. Liz Pulliam Weston. Capitalism without bankruptcy is like Christianity without hell. I like that. Frank Borman, former CEO of Eastern, that's bankrupt, Eastern Airlines back in 1986. Frank Borman said that. Capitalism without bankruptcy is like Christianity without hell. Well, bankruptcy, once regarded as a shameful and humiliating failure, has become an everyday fact of life. More Americans filed for bankruptcy last year in the United States than in the entire decade of the 1960s. Did you get that? More Americans filed for bankruptcy in the year 2004 than in the entire 10 years of the 1960s. And with millions of consumers struggling under record-breaking debt loads in an environment of rapidly rising interest rates, those numbers are likely to continue climbing in the months and years ahead. What's behind the bankruptcy boom? Well, in simplest terms, it stems from a growing tendency for consumers to spend more than they can afford to repay. But there are other less obvious factors at work, including the shrinking availability of health insurance and the rise of computerized credit scoring. Pause. Let's take a look here at including the shrinking availability of health insurance. Boys and girls, I don't have any health insurance, and I'm not poor, and I'm not on the verge of bankruptcy. Let me tell you a little story here about health insurance. If you're an average American with health insurance, you're paying about $10,000 a year. And if you're sitting there saying, ha, ha, Gordon, but it's my company that pays for it. Oh, no, sucker. No, your boss isn't paying 5 cents toward your health insurance. Not a dime. Nothing. Zero. Zilch. Nada. Zippo. I'm an old-timey employer. I never paid a dime for anybody's social security, and I never paid a dime for somebody's health insurance. You workers pay every damn dime. Don't ever forget that. You workers out there, you pay every penny of your benefit package. Comes right out of your labor, sucker. Now, if you think that your employer is paying any of these benefits, you got your head up the wrong end again, Don, Tom, Bill, Bob, Sally. So let me explain to you how this works so that you can get in here on the bottom line. You come to work for me, and I say to you, well, what do you do? And you say, well, I'm a mechanic. I say, good, good, because I'm going to sell your mechanical services, and I'm going to call you Mr. Goodwrench, and I'm going to put you to work out here in my shop, and I'm going to pay you $10 an hour, Mr. Goodwrench. And in addition to that $10 an hour, I'm going to give you health benefits and pay half your Social Security and give you a 401k Kroger plan. And I'm going to do all these neat things. Now, just add up all these benefits that you've got, Sally, working down here at the casino. All these benefits. All right. Now, as your employer over here, I got a set of shop rate over here, so I decide I'm going to charge $35 an hour shop rate. So my customer comes in, and his car ain't running too good. And so I sign him in here, and he signs this contract. He gives me his name, address, and telephone number, and Social Security number. He gives us all this information because he doesn't have any privacy. And he's a mechanical incompetent, so he has to come in here to the shop and pay me $35 an hour to have you, Bob, work on his car. So I'm going to pay you $10 an hour. I'm going to charge him $35 an hour. Okay. So you work on his car for 3 hours, and I charge this guy $105. You know, plus parts. Okay, now, I give you $30, Bob. Now, out of that $30, I got $75 left over. Now, out of that $75, I pay for the health insurance, and I do all these payments and stuff over here, see? All these benefits. And when we get down here on the bottom line, I net about $25. Maybe 30. Maybe 40, I don't know. But I'm going to net something, and what I'm shooting for is I want to net as much as I'm paying you. So if I'm paying you $10 an hour, I want to make $10 an hour. And all the rest of this over here is what we call overhead. The cost of goods sold, as an accountant would say. It's a necessary cost of doing business. And this is why your prices keep going up. This is what adds to price inflation. You know, the more I got to pay Bob over here, the mechanic. You know, Bob comes to me and says, well, I got to have a raise, boss. And if you don't give me a raise, I'm going to quit and go down the street. So I said, okay, Bob, hang on. I'm going to give you a $2 raise, Bob, because I'm such a nice guy. I'm going to give you $12 an hour now. if I'm going to give Bob $12 an hour, then one of two things has to happen. I got to cut back on services, or I got to raise my prices. So I'm going to raise my prices $2. So I'm going to raise my shop rate to $40 an hour. I'm not going to raise my shop rates to $37 an hour. I'm going to round it off to $40. So now, Bob, I'm giving you $12 an hour, and I'm still making my same $12 an hour, but I've raised that $3, so I'm going to make $15 an hour. Every time I pay you a little raise, Bob, I'm going to charge more money to the customer. Now, your customer that comes in here, he has to pay more money to get his car fixed, or if he's a businessman, to get his vans and trucks fixed. And so he raises his prices, Bob. And so when you go down to the local restaurant to buy something, well, the restaurant had to pay more money because you charged $2 an hour more to fix the delivery truck. And so now down at the restaurant, they charge more money for you to buy your pancakes and eggs down at Denny's. You know, what goes around, Bob, comes around. And when we got to pay you more dollars an hour, we got to charge you more dollars an hour. That's all. So if you wage earners out there, honest to God, believe that you're getting ahead with wage increases, let me give you the real sad facts. Since 1973, you have not had a pay increase in the United States of America. You have not had a pay increase since 1973, Bob, Sally, Janie. Now, let's wake up. Doesn't happen. It is true that in 1973 you were being paid $5 an hour. And it is true that today you're being paid $10 an hour. So you're sitting here saying, why, I'm making twice as much money as I was back in 73. No, you're not, Bob. No, Bob, you're not being paid twice as much. You're being paid twice as many dollars, and twice as many dollars does not buy as much as $5 did in 1973. So your purchasing power has gone down. You're not only losing your privacy, you're losing your purchasing power on top of it. So when you went out here and joined the union, you know, you didn't advance yourself any. You're still an employee. And there's no privacy in employment. So if you want to be private, you need to get out of the employee business. First of all, there's no money in employment. Second, there's no privacy in employment. And some guy comes along and says, well, and I'll go to work for myself and I'll be a self-employed person. Bob, wake up. If there isn't any money in employment, what would make you think that there's money in self-employment? What would make you think that if there's no privacy in employment, that there's more privacy in self-employment? Now listen to my words. There's no money in employment. There's no privacy in employment. Whether you're working for me or working for yourself, you're still an employee. Why don't you concentrate on property? Why don't you think about property and maybe being a trader at law on a cash basis without recourse to Standard Dollar's lawful money? Huh? Now, I know that's a wild legal term over there, so for some of you lawyers out there, think about this now for a moment. Concentrate on this. I'm a trader at law on a cash basis without recourse to Standard Dollar's lawful money. Now, what are we going to do here? I want privacy and I want to make money. I want to do deals and I want to be private in my transactions. So I've got to be able to deal in gold and silver coin. Now, it is true, oftentimes you're making a business deal. I'll tell you a little story over here. I bought a piece of ground over here a couple of years back, and the guy that had the piece of ground, he wanted $50,000 for it. And I said, Everett, $50,000 is a lot of money. And I reminded him that May Heard, when she bought the property back in 1924, only paid $3,000, I think it was $3,200 in gold coin back in 1924. So he said, well, I paid $26,000 for it in 1990, and now I want $50,000. I said, well, Everett, you're going to make a $24,000 capital gain. And he said, well, that's right. I want to make a $24,000 capital gain. So I said, Everett, let me pay you $6,400 in U.S. gold coin under Title 31, USC, 5102 through 5112. I might as well have told this guy that we could fly to the moon on the next NASA flight because it went right over Everett's head. He didn't understand that. He said, "Well, I don't know. I want a cashier's check for $50,000." I said, "Everett, if you take a cashier's check for $50,000, it's prima facie evidence of a profit. You bought it for $26,000, and you're going to sell it for $50,000. You're going to make a $24,000 capital gain. The capital gain tax is 28%. So you take let's just do it here, $24,000 times 0.28." $6,720 capital gain tax. And he said, that's okay, that's what I want. I said, Everett, if you'd sell that property for $6,400, and in 1990 you paid $26,000, and you sold it for $6,400, let's try that one out. $26,000. And let's take $6,400. You'd have a $19,600 loss. Now, how much capital gain do you owe on a $19,600 loss? Went right over his head. He couldn't grasp it. Said, okay, Everett, you need a $50,000 cashier's check. Give me your social security number. So I went over to his house. I put the $6,400 in gold in a bag on his kitchen table. And then I said, now, Everett, give me a bill of sale for that piece of ground. I did my own title research, my own title search. Did you know you could do your own title search? Don't know. Average guy doesn't know how to do that, so. But you save a little money if you do your own title search, and all you gotta do is go down to the recorder of deeds and say, hey, is there a lien on this piece of ground? And she'll look it up and say, no, there's no lien. Okay, well, I guess we got a clear title. I don't need to pay some jerk to walk over from the title company and ask Elma the same question. I can ask her and save $500. If there's a lien, she'll tell me, and then I'll go to Everett and say, Jesus, you didn't pay Everett, or hey, Everett, you didn't pay old Tom, the plumber, and he put a lien on the property. Anyway, I had to get Everett's social security number in order to get him a cashier's check. You know, there's no privacy when you're dealing in commercial paper. The IRS wants their cut. When you deal in gold, we don't have taxes to pay. Did you know that property has never been assessed or taxed in the United States? Let me repeat that. You know, there's two or three of you out there that went right over your head. Property is the holy grail of Anglo-Saxon administration. Property is not taxed. Never has, ain't now, and ain't gonna be. That's why I suggest that we deal more in property than in commercial paper. I know it's a wild new concept for most of you, but let's think about it. Mull it over a little bit. And instead of employment, maybe we'd like to be traders. Instead of self-employed, maybe a trader at law on a cash basis. Ain't so bad. Well, anyway, I went into the gold broker and I said, here, I got to have a $50,000 cashier check. Now, the gold broker is a commercial man. He's a banker. He's a private banker. That's what a gold broker is. He's the guy that takes your gold and for a fee he converts it into something else. Now, if I walked into a gold broker and I put 10 ounces of gold down and I said, give me English pounds for this, he'd do it and charge me a fee. If I said, give me Russian rubles for this, he'd do it. If I said, well, give me Canadian dollars for this, no problem. And I said, give me a cashier's check for this. And he said, that's no problem. Give me your social security number. I said, okay, get me a cashier's check, make it out to Everett, and here's his social security number. Hell, the broker, he don't care who makes it out there. And so I put the gold bag down on the counter, and he counted it out and said, yeah, that's about a $50,000 transaction's worth. And so he went down to the bank and got a $50,000 cashier's check and brought it back, gave it to me. I brought it back and gave it to Everett. I got a bill of sale for $6,400 in gold. And I paid a little more than May did back in 1924, but then she built a house, fenced it off, and cleared it. So I figured it's probably worth another $3,000. When we do business in gold coin, prices don't change. The value of gold hasn't changed. In fact, it's undervalued today. It's worth a lot more in Federal Reserve notes than they're willing to pay, but it'll come back into balance one of these days. But here's the moral to the story. Until I told you this story about this transaction, did you know anything about it? A private transaction is done in gold coin. And when you do business in gold, it's pretty private. When you do business as a trader, it's pretty private. Now, I'm sharing with you this story. It's a transaction. It's the way you do business when we do business in real money. Gold coin, silver coin, so on. And then somebody says, you recorded it with the county recorder. No, I didn't. I never recorded the deed. You people couldn't find that piece of property with both hands high noon with a road back. You don't have to record a deed, for crying out loud. Let's be intelligent people here. If you do a cash transaction, why do you need to record it? Why do I need to tell the state or the county or the IRS or anybody else that I went out and bought this or I sold that? The reason that you're making all these recordings is because you people are all merchants. And you go out here and you borrow money from the bank. And you leverage yourself out into the stratosphere. And you deal in commercial paper. Well, hell, if you're going to use somebody else's commercial paper, well, then you got to pay them a commission, don't you? You know, when I go to the gold broker and I say, hey, I want to buy your services. I want to use your services. He charges me a fee. He charges me a commission for doing that. Gold brokers don't work for nothing, neither does the IRS or the United States government or MasterCard or American Express. Those people all expect to get paid. That's why I don't do business with American Express. They expect to get paid too much and deliver too little. It's a bad business transaction. That's why I don't do business with the Mafia or the Cosa Nostra. Or the IRS, or the EPA, or the State Tax Commission. Those are criminal activities. They're prohibited by God Almighty Himself. It's against the law for you to pay interest and usury on a past due tax bill to the IRS. That's why I don't do business with the Internal Revenue Service, good people that they are. I did business with them for a lot of years. Hell, I had my own caseworker, Mary Trudeau. I didn't have very satisfactory business relationships with the IRS. I don't recommend them. I didn't like the business transactions. I don't like the way they do business. I didn't like it then, and I don't like it anymore today. But, you know, if you want to buy their services, if you want to buy their products, well, then you got to pay them. Some guy the other day called me and he said that I was a tax protester. I said, what in the hell are you talking about, tax protest? I'm not protesting any taxes. You know, I teach a school here on taxes. I teach a tax school. I tell people you need to pay your taxes. All of you people out there with social security numbers need to file and pay your taxes. All of you people out there that have federal tax ID numbers need to file and pay your taxes. That was my objection one of my objections with the American Express card. They said, what is your federal tax identification number? What is your social security number? I don't know. I don't want to do business with the IRS. Now, American Express does business with the IRS, and all of their cardholders do business with the IRS. I don't want to do business with the United States of America. It's a criminal enterprise. It's a criminal activity. It violates the law of God. It violates thou shalt not steal. It violates unjust weights and balances statute. I mean, there's eight statutes in the scripture that it violates. I would suggest that we rethink this and stop doing that. Not only do we lose our property, we lose our money. If you're doing business with the IRS, it could cost you up to 74% of everything you create and produce. 74%. You could. There's 14 taxes that are associated with that. 14 nickel and dime programs. That's what I objected to, remember, about American Express. I said, Jesus, they got 10 bucks here. They got 6 bucks there. They got 2.99% there. They bait you in with this $95 1 year free, and the next year you got to pay the 95 bucks. They just nickel and dime you to death. That's what the IRS does. They come in here with this neat deal. Would you like to have a job to pay $60 an hour at General Motors? Get a Social Security number and go down and sign on and become an employee. God, that really sounds good. So we all left the farms and went to work for Henry Ford, remember, for $5 a day back in 1913. God, that sounded real good. So we gave up our land. We went to the city. Now we live in the city as employees working for the major corporations. And now that they've got all of our ID, they've got all of our information, they got us locked up in the cities, we're divorced from the land and totally dependent upon them. And we call this freedom? Have we taken leave of our senses here, kids? You know, there was a time in America when we actually had privacy. We actually had freedom. It was about 1900. And then we got on the slippery slope and haven't been the same since. Now, if you want to be a bondservant, why don't you see if you can get a job at Yankee Stadium pitching balls? And I'm sure that if you're good enough at it and you can get a contract with them, you can become a bondservant. If you can stuff a little ball through a net and run up and down on this court and play basketball, I'm sure somebody's going to hire you and pay you a lot of money, and you can become a bondservant. If you don't want any privacy, hey, why don't you go get a job at General Motors? There's all kinds of ways for you to give up your privacy, and you can sign up and you can become a bondservant, and it pays you a lot of money. That's what I hear from a lot of guys. They'll say, well, you know, where else can I make that kind of money? An airline pilot in here, he used to fly 747s, and he was getting paid $130,000 a year. It's back in 1983 or 4 or 5. $130,000 a year flying the left seat. I said, what did you make when you were flying in the right seat? He said, about 70. So he's paying $60,000 in taxes. Is he making $130,000? Hell no. He's making the same amount of money flying the left seat as he was flying the right seat. Crying out loud. And all he did was change seats, and he got another stripe on his sleeve. Hey, I'm out of time again. And I have to give you a final reminder here that you are listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you want more information, call us. We'll be glad to tell you all about us. For more information, call The Law School at 417-273-4967. And while you're at it, ask for that free General Law CD package. There's nothing private about it. We're trying to be real public and share it with you. Freedom isn't for everybody, but it might be for you. Take a look, and if it isn't, reject it. It doesn't cost anything. That number again, 417-273-4967. Or if you're online, you can go to our webpage, georgegordon.org. All right, The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there, so we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.